Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, hanging out at the Hiawatha, Nashville, Tennessee. I'm here with Ruth Rundle. Emma, how you doing?
That's I'm a good. Mouthful. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. This is our first tour date on this run, so gracious enough to talk to us about gear, and lucky enough, you have a guitar on.
So I do.
Tell me about your T-Bird here.
Well, this is a T-Bird. It's the only guitar I've ever named.
What's its name?
We named this guitar the Cloud. It was a gift from a friend of mine, Amilcar, who was part of working with Guild and bringing this model back in a modernized version. I like this guitar a lot. I think that he thought of me in making this because I typically have played SGs.
Yeah, I remember you playing those with Red Sparrows and Marriages and that stuff. So what do you like about this that is familiar with the SG, but also something new and unique to you in terms of how it feels and plays?
A lot of it feels very similar. The scale length is similar. The radius is even less. You know, it's more of a flat radius on the fretboard with this guitar, which I really like a lot. I don't like radius very much. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the scale length, the radius, the fact that it's kind of this, you know, darker sounding humbucker tone. Simple electronics here, and similar bridge style to an SG. It's a very similar guitar in that regard. I think the neck on this is a little bit more durable, not quite as bendy. yeah, I love this guitar.
Cool. And besides maybe, you know, supporting a friend that gave you a nice gesture, what do you like about it that maybe the SG doesn't do for you in the current setup of your band and sound? Especially on Dark Horses and stuff.
Well, they have different, they just have slightly different personalities. I'd say that this has a little bit more balanced clarity in the high end, you know, when I'm doing anything on the top three strings, mm-hmm. where my SG is just a little bit meaner, I think, and a little bit darker. And I do still play my SG, I just leave it in Europe. So when I'm there, I'm playing the SG, and when I'm here, I'm playing this.
Cool. And well, here's the fun part where I'm going to start asking you questions about tunings, because that's always a question. And as Evan was leaving the stage, he's like, you're always constantly chasing tunings. I know a home base for you is Dadgad, but from there you kind of evolve and kind of chase down different tunings that you're at. So throughout a set currently and what you're running now, like what are some tunings that you're using?
Well, so Dadgad is like the model for the tuning, uh-huh. But I'm actually dropped down into, this guitar stays in C. So it would be like a Dadgad, but C. It's typically, and then I capo around from there. Mm-hmm. But the tuning, the way the tunings work, the differences usually take place on what would traditionally be the G string.
Okay.
And by changing the tuning and tension of the string, changing the note, it controls whether the tuning is a major, minor, or modal tuning.
What do you like about that flexibility of having that?
I don't know, I think I just was drawn to open tunings at some point in my career as a self-taught guitarist. Mm-hmm. The instrument makes more sense to me in open tunings. Because you can sort of build your chords around the way that I do it. The root note is always either on the fifth or sixth string, and it's really easy to sort of go from there. If mm-hmm. you're not the sharpest tool in the shed, it just kind of simplifies the game for me a little, and I really like. There's a certain sound when you're doing open tunings, having some of those strings ringing through many passing chords has a unique quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, does that answer the
question? Yeah. Well, I was curious about like, do you enjoy having the open strings fill up the sound because you use such lush reverbs, in the sense that. You let the strings ring out in a nature that's almost musical rather than just filling space. And is that what you do? You enjoy using the open tunings for that regard to have like atonal strings or like chorusing of the strings?
Yeah, it's like a pedaling effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. And then what's for the baritone here behind me? What one tuning do you use for that?
So that's also goes through both like a major, minor, and a modal set of tunings. But that's anchored at G sharp is okay. My open, what that is tuned to, open G sharp.
Gotcha. Yeah,
it's pretty low.
And for strings, I guess for the guild, do you know like gauge strings or branch strings you're using?
Yes, I always use D'Addario strings, and with this I'm using 12s with a wound G. The wound G is crucial for me, for tone-wise. Yeah, so I use these guys. Plug. Yeah, I've had just really good luck with these strings. I've never broken a string in my life.
Wow.
On stage, but that's probably attributed to the fact that I don't use a pick.
Yeah,
either.
You're also very nuanced with your finger style.
And then these are the strings I'm using for the baritone. It's a 13 through 62 baritone light gauge nickel wound strings.
You had mentioned just before that you do play finger style. How has that been developed in terms of your playing style? Was that something you just kind of always have used your fingers?
Yeah, I just never learned to play with a pick, really, and by the time I got one in my hands, it just wasn't really very natural. I think the finger style technique that I'm using sort of evolved in different ways. Like I worked in a guitar shop for a long time, mm-hmm. and would just get little bits and pieces of information from many different people coming through the store, different teachers coming down from their lessons, kind of spending 5 minutes with me. I'd say it was between like maybe playing and reading some banjo rolls. Like that definitely influenced and informed my finger style, and then doing some classical guitar stuff there too, which is where I actually learned to use the nylon nails, the press-on nails, over my actual nails to get a better tone.
I do notice you still strum too.
Like yeah,
you
have still a pick. Strum. I guess I do kind of use the index nail much like you would use a pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's just all your own style, so that's cool. And you got, just like Evan, you're running two amps. You got the stereo set up.
We've got the stereo situation going here with the jazz chorus, the Roland jazz chorus, the JC-120, and then that little Fender combo over there.
How did you land on that combination of the two, the Fender Roland 1-2 punch?
Well, I think that having, a solid state and a tube amp, like you get a little bit of both worlds. For the super low tunings that I do, something like a jazz chorus just works really well. It communicates the low frequencies mm-hmm. Clearly without breaking up. You get that super clean sound from that. That's not like harsh the way that like, I don't know, it has this kind of honest sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that's why I have that. And then the other amp I actually bought from Evan's brother. And I'm not too crazy about that amp. I think that I need something that has like 410s in it because it just breaks up a little bit too much. But you get with too much too soon. You get the color with the tube breakup. Because just relying on the pedals to control the gain and overdrive, that can be a little brash sounding through something like this, so it's the best of both worlds.
Do you run all the effects through both amps, or just the Fender or the jazz chorus?
I have different, I can show you what I'm doing. I have some of the effects, like up into, I split the effects after the M9,
okay.
So everything, all of my dynamic, like, volume-based effects are going through both amps, and then I have slightly different reverb delay paths after that.
Well, that's a perfect segue, Emma. Let's talk pedals.
Okay.
All right, Emma, you're so kind. You even put on the baritone, so that's cool. But there's a cool story behind this before we hear sounds from your pedal board.
Yeah, well, okay, so this is the second. I have two of these guitars. Again, one of them lives in Europe. But and I was turned on to this specific guitar, and this is the Fender Jaguar Special HH Baritone by a bandmate of mine, Paris Pat, many years ago. He had one of these, and it just sounded incredible. So I lusted after the guitar. The Fender stopped making them. They're very difficult to find, and it's been this sort of like ongoing crusade. I'm always looking for them.
Yeah.
When Marriages was on a tour in Arizona, and somebody connected me with this guy that was selling one on eBay, but he was in Tucson, I think is where it was. Anyway, I wrote to him. He took it offline. He brought it to the show, sold it to me there. This is the second one I have, and I got this one from a fan recently who reached out to me on Twitter and wrote this really sweet, lovely note saying that they got the guitar because they read about me playing it, mm-hmm. But that they hadn't played it a lot, and they thought it would be a good place if I could have the guitar that they'd feel okay about it.
It's a good home.
Yes, so they sold it to me. Anyway, it's been very sweet being united with these unusual, hard to find guitars through the fans. I did have to do a little rewiring on this, and as a result, this pickup switch is actually backwards. So this is my neck pickup, not my bridge pickup. I don't use the bridge.
What caused that?
When I opened it up and I soldered it, I was using the old wiring in there, mm-hmm. And resoldering it just wasn't long enough. If I could go in there with some fresh wire and solder, I could fix it, but it was like the couple days before tour and, you know, it works.
Yeah, no, you're good.
I'm always trying to throw people off.
Is that what it is?
Putting things on upside down. No, but yeah.
Cool. Well, let's dive into this pedal board. I want to hear how this big bad boy can growl.
Okay. What do you want to hear first?
Well, I guess we could start with the Palisades. Let's start with that, just because I want to hear how that gets through that.
Okay.
And, like, maybe in a context of, like, when you kick on the Palisades with the baritone. Is there any song specific?
For sure. I use the Palisades for almost every song that has a heavy section. It's a pedal, it's Earthquaker Devices, and I believe that it's modeled after a Tube Screamer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but it has these gain A, gain B, and a boost section. I haven't really been using the gain B, use gain A, and then I use the boost, like in Protection.
Okay.
Yeah, and then in combination with the Black Eye, which is a boost, I don't know what this pedal is modeled after, but I leave this on all the time. It just kind of like adds clarity to the tone and some nice volume. So yeah.
Cool.
Super, super thick, super heavy.
But it stays
overdrive.
Tight. It stays pretty tight with the baritone. Sometimes, you know, distortion pedals or dirt boxes with the baritone, it's already really loud and rumbly. That still keeps the low end.
Yeah, and there's a integrity to the note value, like the tone of the note that remains. So I really love the sound of it. I've gone through a lot of different distortion pedals and overdrives. And this is by far my favorite one.
I think the next pedal I gotta ask you about is just because I associate with it is the Deluxe Memory Man, but with the Hazorai.
Yeah, that's
what makes that so special for you?
This is just one setting that I use, which is the Reverse Echo. And I have this sort of preset dialed in. To me, it just has a very beautiful sound. It's unique. It's very instrumental for me in creating like a vibe, mm-hmm. and creating, filling out a space. So you can hear like there's a lot of repeats and like it's reverse repeating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just creates a dreamy atmosphere. It's probably my favorite pedal. Like if I could leave with just a couple pedals. And
the Memory Man.
That would be the one.
Yeah.
I've had like four or five of them.
Before we go any further, I mentioned that you have your initials on all the pedals, and that was something your dad taught you, right?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta put your name on your tools, you know, if they get stolen.
It's a smart move.
Like, that's mine.
It's a smart move. What about something like, I don't know if this is the baritone song, but like Dark Horse, that has a lot of dynamics where it goes quieter, softer to, you know, pretty heavy stuff. Is that getting included with the Palisades and the Black Eye?
Yeah, I'm using a lot of the, we do a lot of stuff on that song. Like all of these pedals end up getting used and that instrumental section, like kicking on the Memory Man to sort of fill in some of that and then turning on the whammy. I typically, when I use the whammy, have it up, just up one octave set to an octave above. Mm-hmm. And
do you use it in conjunction with the baritone ever? The whammy, or is that just kind of for the T-Bird?
No, I do. I use it in the song Dead Set Eyes. I use the whammy.
I would and love to hear it.
Yeah.
Just hear it through the baritone. I don't know if I've ever heard a whammy through a baritone.
I mean, I don't do a lot of the like crazy squealy sounds, but...
Just the octave up even.
Sure. Yeah, and then I've been capoing around touring on this record, trying to like minimize how many guitars I tour with.
Yeah.
It's just becomes impractical at a certain point. So getting a lot of use out of a capo.
Would you say it's a writing tool as well, or is it just kind of a touring thing? Like,
it's a touring thing. Yeah. I don't typically write with capos, although maybe I should start because having to relearn all the songs. Yeah, typically what I'll do is I'll have my guitar tuned a certain way, write a song in that tuning, and then completely change like the key and tuning of the guitar to record and to write. And then it's this whole backwards process of like relearning the songs, mm-hmm. And obviously trying to minimize changing the tunings live. So hence the capo. Yeah, it's a bit convoluted really. But it saves me from having to
It's your own
around.
Wild recipe.
It is. Makes zero sense.
As long as it makes sense to you, that's all that matters.
So yeah, this is probably the most extreme tone that I will have in the set, is the combination of the whammy, the black eye, the palisades, and then these three things just are constant. That's the context I have. So everything runs into the M9,
okay.
And then I split it from there into the stereo situation where I'm going out into the context to the Fender, and that's just a reverb pedal, that's a Red Panda. Mm-hmm. And then the other side I have two Boss pedals, a DD6 and an RV5 that are going to the jazz chorus, and those also just remain on all the time. I don't fuck with them at all.
Yeah. And do you use the reverb or the modulation at all?
No.
So that's, you're coming from the pedals.
Yeah, coming from the pedals. So this would be probably the most extreme tone. I hope not to hurt you. Yeah, so it's kind of a little bit of almost like a My Bloody Valentine kind of vibe.
But my ears aren't like, I don't think I have tinnitus, so I don't think you and Kevin Shields rank and volume. I think it's all right. I'll survive.
I don't have 7 amps or however many he's using.
Yeah.
Sadly, I would love to. But so that's a sound.
And then with the line 6, is that just kind of for more modulation and delays, or is there anything specific that that's doing?
So the line 6, I'm using the line 6 for everything that the DL4 before this. So this line 6 M9 sort of combines all of those similarly sized effects units. And I use it for, I love this pedal. For many reasons, and I've tried to get away from it because it takes up a lot of real estate and I've had some strange issues with it, especially overseas with the power. Mm-hmm. This pedal is great, it's so easy to use because I love having a tap tempo. It's crucial for me to have a delay, like while I do like to leave these delays sort of set more ambiguously, just adding textures, I do love and need to have a tap tempo. And so I have two delays on this one. I've got a ping pong going.
Okay.
And again, this is a stereo, so we're going between the two amps. And then I have a digital delay. And I love that you can kind of just very quickly change the note value, and you can EQ your delays. And I'm mostly using this for a delay. Like I have in a pinch on tours before, if some other pedals malfunction, you know, it has everything. It has reverbs, in marriages, I used it a lot more for more modulated sounds, chorus and tremolo and stuff. In this project, I haven't really been using that kind of modulation. And then if you hold down the tap, it switches over into the looping section, which I use this live as well. And it's, again, just very much like the DL4, where it does the halftime, the reverse. You can do all kinds of loops. And it's easily controlled by foot, which is crucial when you don't want to put your bend down to, you know, mess with your pedals.
Are you and Evan ping-ponging at the same time ever, or is it kind of like, you know...
It's not never synced up.
Gotcha.
If it ever happened that way, it would be a coincidence.
It would be like your gear had like a self-realization and start taking over.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about, Emma, is you run in-ears, which isn't uncommon, but you run just your vocals, right?
Yeah, it's just the vocal, and I just have it in my right ear.
Is that just to hear yourself more through the mess of tones you guys are using, or is it...
Yeah, I mean, it's just to be able to control. I think it sort of originated, I was using a Blue 200 microphone, which was kind of tricky, and I was never able to get enough of it in the monitor. And we're not like the loudest band on earth, but it is loud. And I just got sick of not being able to hear my own voice. And it's kind of important to hear that if you want to sing at all in key. And I'm not a great singer. I don't consider myself like a singer. But that is very helpful. And I just wear the one. It's better to not use it at all. Like, I do think that having the in-ears kind of can interfere with the vibe, you know? I can't hear my guitars as well.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily feel as in it. Again, I don't have a whole mix going. I control it myself. But yeah.
Cool, Emma. Thank you so much. We're going to talk to Evan right now. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you.
All right, other side of the stage, or I guess a little further left. Evan, how you doing?
Great.
Dude, thank you so much. Not familiar. Evan obviously is with Emma, but he's also Young Widows. So I'll start there. I'm familiar with that being a Tele band, Tele neck pickup guy.
Yeah.
So what brings you to the Coronado land?
The Coronado was the closest instrument I could find that sounded like an acoustic guitar that you could get as loud as possible.
So, and this particular one doesn't have any feedback issues?
I've not had many feedback issues. It bottoms out a bit when getting more overdrive, but it doesn't bottom out at the appropriate volume. So,
gotcha. Yeah. And then Perry were asking before, and that's because this version of the Coronado is semi, right?
Semi-hollow.
So it has the block through it, not, you know, the originals were hollow.
Yeah.
Unwieldy kind of monsters.
Yeah, the originals are basically unplayable through an amplifier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And strings, what strings are you running? Because this is the only one you got in tour.
Yeah, I'm doing 11s, and I believe these are 11s and 56.
All right.
GHS, boomers. I've been using boomers for a long time, and just doing like I've been playing in drop D standard for my whole life, and that's still where I'm at.
Yeah, so. It's like the home base kind of thing.
Yeah.
I feel most comfortable.
I know where everything is.
Yeah.
I think I do, at least.
Fake it till you make it kind of thing. And capo, anything special about that?
The capo is kind of like the wandering capo in most songs. I don't ever take notes or know where things are, and I kind of have to remember. And
just the feel thing.
Just the feel thing. And a lot of Emma's songs, and she uses open tuning, so I'll have to find the way. And I use a drone note because I've been finger picking lately, and I always try to have a drone note, and the capo works out well finding that note that I can use throughout the song, rather than, you know, always having to reach back and hit that low note.
Yeah. So. Cool. And I mean, like I said, this is all you're using, kind of flying without a net type of deal.
Yeah.
And do you do anything to this guitar to make it more your own in your pickups, or is it stock?
This is stock. Actually, these Fidelitron pickups, they're great. I mean, I don't know. A lot of people like to modify their guitars, but I kind of like to just find the way they built it. And I don't like to be like, well, what if I put these pickups and change this out and change these things out and tuners. And I kind of like to get it as it is and decide if I want it or I want to keep it. So I went through several semi-hollow body guitars that I won't mention, but I went through several and didn't like any of them, and this was the one that stuck with.
Cool. And Well, I was going to say, what's your backup? You don't have a backup. So we're talking amps. You got two amps. You're running those in stereo. So I've known you to be a double Varelin guy with the Young Widows. So talk to me about with the high watt and how that got inserted.
I still am a double Varelin guy, and the high watt's a backup right now. And it's basically this Varelin. It's the 10th Varelin that he's ever made, and it's modeled after this high watt. So it's kind of working as my backup.
Cool. And,
until we get to Seattle, so.
And get that work done by Ben, I imagine.
Correct.
Cool. Yeah. And is there anything that you do specifically to EQ them differently, or are they kind of just the same? Just you just have double the sound, I guess.
They're similar. This definitely has more bottom end.
Okay.
And this is kind of more the mid range tone, and I'm kind of keeping this cleaner, and this one has a little more gain.
Cool.
So. And that would be the big difference. But I try to stay close to the same tone on both sides, so it's not, all the ping pong gets really confusing if it's a completely different tone on that side than on this side. So
you can get lost in the mix.
Yeah.
And well, we're breezing right through. Got the pedal board. I want to know, I'll just jump right into it. Song Protection, I know you play slide on that.
Mm-hmm.
What is kind of there's like a real gritty slide tone that you have in there, so I just love to know what the combination there is.
That's a wild combination because I believe it's the Context, Red Panda, and the Line 6 DL4, and a Ping Pong DL4, so it's really long. And then, actually, I'm trying to think of how to even play that song. It's hard to play a song without playing the song with everyone else, but it's and then I use the raster that kind of does this long trailing backwards reverb.
All right.
It's, you know, I can kind of show how that works, but on its own, it just sounds like. And then with all the ping pong, it's like. It's barely really noticeable, but it keeps on adding texture. And the let me see if I can find the slide.
Yeah, and while you're digging it out, what slide do you have, like a specific slide you go after, like a glass or Pyrex?
I use the
brass.
I use the Dunlop old steady steel.
Yeah.
You know, it's I've gone through a couple different brass ones, but this is the one that's easiest to find. And honestly, I don't know much about playing slide guitar.
Just kind of contextual thing?
Yeah, it was just one of those things, I guess, early on with playing guitar, I'd always loved slide players, but I didn't, you know, I never really kind of dipped too much into finding the right slide. It was just which one fit my finger.
Yeah.
Didn't fly off, so. And then, so back to all these, this for protection, it's the MXR microamp. And the Voyager, made by Walrus.
Yeah, out of Oklahoma.
So it's, when it's going, it's like. Yeah, and I kind of try to tame off the trails and the reverb, and I'm always stepping on distortions to get it to where it quiet downs quicker and try to keep it in control, which is difficult at that.
Have you messed around with using a volume pedal for that, kind of like a quicker
snap
on the trails?
I have. I kind of just don't feel like lugging it around.
Yeah.
Like that's like the volume. Thing. Yeah, the volume pedal is one of those things that I always like. I've used them in my life, and then always I'm like, I don't need that. I'll just use my knob. And that's, you know, most of the swells. And in Emma's set, I use the volume knob. So that's that song,
cool.
Particular part.
And walk me through the rest of your pedals and kind of how you're using them. I mean, that was just a jumping off point for me as a fan knowing that song.
Well, this is, first I'm going into the Red Panda mixer, which is a 3-input. Basically like a mixing board, but it's just volumes for each thing you know,
run into
each input. So I use that because in the next set, with doing JJL, I use the synthesizer, and I can control the maximum volume of the synthesizer with that pedal. And it's nice. I can actually, there's been times when I actually played with like a thumb piano through that pedal as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's versatile.
So then the tuner and the context. And this, you know, I kind of go back and forth between the settings. This has been my favorite reverb pedal that I've found in recent history. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the only thing that I would say, I would love if they made a foot switch for the pedal and you could just switch through the settings.
Oh, rather than having to do the dial?
Yeah, rather than having to reach down. And I'm kind of tall, so from here to the floor.
It's a long trip.
What
is like a favorite setting you have on the context or something that you're normally using?
I generally use the room or the cathedral.
Okay.
And those two, just so I don't have to do too much knob twisting and change my settings just beyond the actual sound. Those would be the two go-to. And then the Voyager, and I've been using that with Young Widows for a very long time, since Brady, who actually does Old Blood Noise endeavors, is the guy who hooked me up with this pedal, and he was working for Walrus at the time and then broke off and started Old Blood Noise endeavors. And that one, something about the tone knob on it, like it just has this nasty mid-range that never cuts into feeding back.
Is it like an overdrive, or like would you say it's more of a distortion?
It's an overdrive.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I was using this, but the they broke it on a flight on the way back.
Oh,
and
shit.
I have yet to take it off my board because I want to ship it to them. And that's the XS, which I played on Emma's record, and it's a chorus and delay distortion. So it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I bet you can get some crazy sounds out of that.
I got a sound with this that I was using on almost every single song, and it was upsetting to lose it while in Europe. You know, and it's just one of those things. It's just, you know, a little tiny toggle switch got pushed in.
And then that's, yeah.
And that's it.
Sinks the ship.
Yep. But, so then, in the chain, it goes over to the MXR microamp, which I've also used for a long time. That was like a thing with Young Widows. I believe I read Steve Albini was like, I only use the MXR microamp for all his boosts, and I was interested in that. And it truly is, it doesn't affect your tone in any way. It just gives you that extra, you know, extra gain or extra thickness.
Push,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, that every other pedal I've tried to use, there's too many options.
Yeah.
And this is just true to the one knob of how much you want to push it, which is perfect. And then we go to the Red Panda Raster, which is, all of their pedals are like kind of, they're kind of out of this world. Like they're kind of hard to get a grip on what they do and how to control it. And this one has just been the one that I've been using a lot throughout JJL and Young Widows and Emma's sets. And the beyond the backwards reverb sound, it does a pitch shift when you step on this, which is kind of like, makes me think of like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or something. It just sends you off into some psychedelic, colorful world.
And what's, is there a part in the set or a song that you use that pitch shifting on?
I use it in the JJL set on the song As Soon As Night. I only use it for a short period of time because it's pretty difficult to sing to. You know, it's, to find the right range and all that pitch shifting, it's complicated. And I use it in a couple parts in the JJL set. And then I go to the Head Rush, which I mostly use in Emma's sets between songs. Just kind of
fill space.
Yeah, fill some space and add textures. And JJL and Young Widows, I use it a lot for sampling, like the song Old Skin and As Soon As Night, and there's a couple of JJL songs. But I've been using that also. I used to have two of those with Young Widows.
Yeah, I remember seeing one. It was really beat the fuck up.
Yeah.
Real gnarly looking.
I lost one of them probably 3 years ago, then, well, JJ was recording a record, I lost the other one and got a new one, which I honestly think this is a better pedal because you can use the delays and you can select through the delays by stepping on both at the same time.
So you can cycle through them?
Yeah. Even though I don't really do that, so I just keep it on loop just in case. Just in case you break a string and you gotta make it look like you're still playing or something, you know?
Since you don't have any backups.
Right, right. So then we go to, this is an old, just fucked up, gnarly AB box that I've probably gone through 20 AB boxes from Morley.
Damn.
And my brother's old band, Coliseum, this one, I believe, belonged to him at one point because there's a sticker of his on it for his band. So it was in a bag of pedals, and I pulled it out and needed one because my other AB broke, and this one still worked.
Go hard on those things.
Yeah. They're pretty bare minimum pedals. They break constantly.
Yeah.
Like the common problem is the knobs get smashed in and touch the bottom of the pedal, then all of a sudden, they're out.
DL4.
So then the DL4, which is
also breakable.
Yeah, this is the fourth one of those I've had. This one's lasted me. You probably can't tell, but I don't clean my pedals too often.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, and I also sweat a lot. I think it might have to do with my size or, So I've had this. This is the fourth one I've had. It's lasted me for a while. And I guess right before Young Widows made the Easy Pain record, I became very infatuated with the ping pong delay, which I've always really liked. I've always been a fan of it and always enjoyed seeing that live and just the stereo effect. And then I got more into the really fast slap back.
That's what I'm going to say. Like with Young Widows, I remember it being a lot quicker. Whereas with Emma, it's a lot more spaced out just because it's a lot moodier music.
And every now and then I won't space it out. And even with JJL, it's like I rarely ever, I most of the time play with it tight. It's like, and a lot of that is just a simple thing, but it adds a lot because without it, it just doesn't have the same thickness. And the first song on the Easy Pain Young Widows record is just me hitting my strings with all the distortion pedals on at once, and kind of just shattering. Like it just makes me think of throwing a brick through a window. And that's a sound that's hard to get with a guitar.
Right. Yeah.
And so then after that we go to the Dark Star, which is Old Blood Noise Endeavors, and this is a pedal that I recently got it right before recording Emma's record, and it does an octave reverb.
Wow.
So I've always wanted an octave pedal. I've messed around with the whammies. I've had all kinds of octave pedals throughout my life and never written a song with them because they always end up sounding like Frankenstein or something.
Yeah.
It just makes this like Johnny Winters, like brings out this sound to me that I've never loved. And this just kind of turns your guitar into strings almost, Keep that only on stage right. And that's the only effect that I have that is solely on stage right.
Is that just to keep it out of your ears directly for like singing and kind of in tune?
Yeah. It's a nice warm sound that isn't offensive in the...
Yeah, I was going to say it's subtle, but it's still there. You can hear it, especially in the trails.
Actually kind of sounds out of tune right now, so... That's the other wild thing is to get this in tune, you have to tune it,
Like you're tuning, yeah.
Like a synthesizer.
Sweet. I mean, that's something, yeah, just that alone. Just messing with the knobs and the fly.
Yeah. And yeah, it kind of makes the guitar almost sound like a baritone as well.
Yeah.
It gives it like a heavier, lower pitch, which is nice for that side. I use it on a lot of the heavier parts and in the set.
Would that get kicked on maybe for like Mark to Death? Mark for Death?
I don't use it in that song just because I didn't kind of collaborate with Emma on writing that song. Mm. That was like a post us working together and making, you know, On Dark Horses. Mm-hmm. So I don't use that on any of the older songs.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that's basically it.
Well, Evan, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Dirty.
Yes. Dirty, very, very dirty. Yeah.
Dirty sounding. Thank you so much. It's Chris Keys for Premier Guitar.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for watching the latest Rig Rundown. Guess what? Every week we upload a brand new Rig Rundown to PremierGuitar.com a full week before it's available here on YouTube. So to get your gear fix as soon as humanly possible, go to PremierGuitar.com/Rig Rundown. And while you're there, be sure to sign up to get an email notification so you're the first to know as soon as each week's new Rig Rundown is available. Cheers, see you soon.